Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome to Closing Bell. I'm Scott Wapner, live from Post 9, right here at the New York Stock Exchange. This make-or-break hour begins with major questions about the market as a new quarter begins. Can technology continue its amazing run? Is energy about to reemerge as the place to be in this market after months of missing the mark? Here is your scorecard with 60 minutes to go now in regulation. Dow up for most of the day and led mostly by United Health and Chevron as oil surges. S&P hanging on to positive territory, too, by about a fifth of a percent. A pullback for tech. The Nasdaq sliding the most of the three major averages today. Interest rates are lower, too, as a read on manufacturing disappoints. It brings us to our talk of the tape, the road ahead, given all that lies ahead. A jobs report this Friday, earnings in a couple of weeks, and, of course, more reads on inflation. To help us navigate all of that, let's welcome in Cameron Dawson, the chief investment officer from New Edge Wealth, right here, as you can see on set. All right, welcome.
Thank you.
New quarter.
Yep.
Same story for the market.
Well, last quarter was certainly led by tech. I mean, it was massive outperformance. And if we look at the spread of performance between tech and energy, it was nearly 40%. And so what we see now is tech is extremely expensive and energy prior to today is extremely cheap.
Why do you say extremely expensive?
Well, it was trading at a 40% premium to the market, which is even higher than it reached back in 2021 at the peak of the pandemic bubble. So that premium is huge and is already pricing in, we think, a lot of potential easing in the Fed or by the Fed.
Oh, is that what you think has led to the run in tech?
I think it's twofold. I think there is a factor of pricing in easier Fed policy reflected by lower interest rates. We did see real interest rates fall through the beginning of the year. And then, of course, there is that flight to safety, which tech has had good performance during past recessions from an earnings standpoint. Mm-hmm. So when you put the two of those things together, you get this big, huge surge in tech.
Flight to cash flow, right? I mean, if you're going to be scrutinizing balance sheets more, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you go there? If you need growth in a low growth environment, why wouldn't you go there?
The only reason why you would be cautious today is because of valuation. Valuation can be a risk in and of itself. Now, there has to be a catalyst. In 2022, valuation was a big risk for tech. Tech earnings weren't bad last year, but the valuation started the year so high. So that's where you have to be very cautious that quality at any price doesn't work.
So would you be a fader of the, there's the XLK, mm-hmm. right? We could show it again. We're looking at it on the screen. That's the tech sector ETF. It's up better than 20%. There it is, 21% year to date, reflecting the move we've seen, which, by the way, you can really boil down to essentially five stocks, mm-hmm. give or take a couple.
Exactly. I mean, the market's been extremely top heavy. And so if you do remove those stocks, you do see a market that's trading at less extended of a multiple. But even the equal weight S&P 500 is trading at about 16 and a half times. That's near the prior high in the pre-pandemic ranges. So it's not as stretched as tech is, but it certainly speaks to that this big rally that we've had year to date has all been multiple expansion.
So obviously, you know, most people are wanting to know whether the rally can continue mm-hmm. or not, whether seasonality is enough of our friend, so to speak, to carry us through some of the rough patches that, you know, may be lurking out there. Chris Verone, Stratega, seasonality an asset for the market into early summer, mm-hmm. he says. But note that all three major indices, and that's the S&P, the Qs, Russell 2000, all have fewer stocks above the 200-day moving average than early February, along with a more restrained new high list. You look at this kind of stuff, too.
Yeah.
Does it stand out, stick out like a sore thumb?
It does. And the other point that Chris made today is that you're seeing less strength out of the cyclical parts of the market. So one of the things that was bullish to begin the year is we saw things like discretionary outperform staples that showed that there was optimism about the growth picture. But ever since we've seen the yield curve starting to reinvert and some of the wobbles going on with banks, what we've seen is cyclicals have rolled over. And so if they start to roll over, things like small caps also rolling over, that would suggest that there could be more earnings risk on the horizon.
Well, maybe discretionary was outperforming because there were, you know, hopes that the consumer was going to remain strong. Mm-hmm. And certainly around certain areas mm-hmm. of staples and defense, for example, got expensive.
They did. And they got really extended going into all of 2022. And that's what you saw with the healthcare sector. Healthcare has really underperformed to begin the year. And part of that is just because it did so well in 2022. And so maybe we're starting to give a little bit of that give back. But the reality is that you've seen such a huge move in growth over value. It's not surprising that you see some kind of snapback, mean reversion. And a cut from OPEC could be just the spark
that
causes that.
Is that, in fact, going to be the spark that, you know, helps this trade reemerge, restart from what has been a surprise? You said, you know, the way you characterized it was technology is incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. energy is incredibly cheap. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, energy has surprised a lot of people in the way it hasn't worked as much as technology has on the other side.
Yeah, I think that the challenge that we have with energy or had at the beginning of the year is everybody was long it. It was everybody's favorite sector.
And rightly so. I mean, it did incredibly well last year.
It did. And at the same time, you have this impact that energy is unlikely to have the same kind of earnings growth that it had last year. And so you have that positioning and you have a little bit slower earnings and then you get to this underperformance. And so what we want to be able to watch very closely, though, is if we can see higher oil prices supporting kind of a reacceleration in that earnings growth for energy names, which would be very bullish for those shares.
All right, let's bring in Emily Rowland now of John Hancock Investment Management as we extend the conversation. Welcome. So new
Thank
quarter,
you.
You heard what Cameron has to say. Now, energy's getting a nice bid today and technology selling off. Is this the way it's going to be, the start of something new as the calendar turns to a new month?
Nope, not so fast. We still prefer the technology sector over energy. And I'll tell you, you've got to be careful when talking about valuations, because one of the reasons that tech looks very expensive is because the earnings estimates have come down. And in fact, we think that they're quite reasonable. S&P 500 tech sector earnings right now are penciled in for just under 1% for 2023. I think that makes sense. I think that that's something that's achievable. Given the challenging macro environment, you look at sectors like consumer discretionary. Analysts are penciling in 26% earnings growth for this year. Comm services is seeing about 15% earnings growth. We just think that that's going to be really tough, especially given the fact that these are very cyclical sectors. They're very sensitive to the economy. Tech, we think, can do well. It features a lot of quality. These are companies with great balance sheets, tons of cash, a limited need to have to go to the capital markets in order to grow. So we continue to like tech over cyclicals in this environment.
Cameron, I'd like you to respond.
Yeah, well, I think that there are parts of tech that are cyclical. And so we do have to be aware of that potential for earning cyclicality. Not all tech has this stable kind of balance sheets, cash flow like software does. But I think that when we look at the valuations, how much of that earning stability is already being priced in? And so that's where we want to be cautious to say, look, if stuff is overextended and overbought, we own a lot of tech. We are neutral tech because it's such a dominant part of the quality index. We continue to focus on quality. But when we're looking for new buys at the margin, we'll look more towards value because of that valuation premium that tech already has.
I mean, in other words, Emily, you're right. Earnings are going to hang in there. But why do you think the stocks have already done what they've done? So that's already being reflected. Is Cameron wrong?
Well, I think some of it's just a reversal from last year's performance. And I completely agree with Cameron that you've got to be really picky when it comes to the tech sector. And we're staying away from those unprofitable growth at any price type tech names. And we're really gravitating towards your sort of classic S&P 500 tech sector, those companies with lots of cash. So being picky, I think, here is really important. But again, if you like quality, which I know Cameron does as well, you know, tech is just going to be your poster child there. So I think in an environment where earnings are going to be significantly challenged, we think that there's going to be a big re-rating in earnings this year as margins come under pressure, as we see this cycle play out, unemployment go up. We want to gravitate towards those areas that just have better balance sheets, more cash, good free cash flow, and that's going to be found in tech.
But do you in part like tech because you also think that rates are done going up? And you think the Fed is done raising?
I think that that's certainly part of the story, but I don't think tech needs lower rates in order to outperform here. That's certainly been the pattern over the past year or so. But again, going back to the fundamentals, going back to the denominator and the PE ratio, earnings are going to be the driver here, and those fundamentals are simply superior.
Let's talk about the Fed for a minute. Mm-hmm. There's no meeting this month, Cameron, obviously. Next month, though, it's going to be front and center again. Are they done?
I think that there's a chance that they still go in May. If we don't have any more banking issues, just for the reason that they will only have March data to work with, because the April data comes out after they meet. They meet on May 3rd and 4th. And so when we look at the underlying growth that we saw, if we look at GDP Now survey, that would all point to this economy still remaining strong through the month of March. So if they're looking at that data and they are data dependent, that would support another 25 basis point move, which is what we've heard from all the Fed speak over the last couple of weeks.
If they do that, do you think that the 25 in May would be it?
Likely.
Because, I mean, I feel like the market is in part moving not just on the idea of a pause, but on the idea of, okay, we can handle another 25, we think, and then that's it.
And then that's it. But then what comes next? Because what's already being priced in is a lot of cuts. By the time we would get to January of next year, nearly 100 basis points of cuts. So for the bond market to be right, or for the bond market to price in even more cuts, you would have to see the Fed effectively outdove the bond market, which is already very dovish.
Emily, you're looking at the 2-year and you think that that is a tell of rate cuts to come. You think the Fed cuts?
Yeah, definitely. Over the course of this year, I think Cameron's right. Maybe one more in May. But, you know, it's so unusual to see some of these moves in the 2-year treasury. I mean, it's acting like a meme stock right now. We saw the 2-year fall, you know, 137 basis points over the course of just a couple of weeks. And that's a significant tell that the Fed is likely to cut rates from here. You don't normally see that type of action in the short end of the curve, and you don't see Fed rate cuts after that. So I think that that's the response here. The Fed funds rate is now meaningfully higher than the 2-year treasury. That's the direction. I think the bond market's probably right here.
All right, Emily, thank you. Leave it there. Cameron, thanks as well.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you back here soon. Let's get to our Twitter question of the day now. We want to know which of these Q1 losers is the best bet for Q2. Is it Charles Schwab, Enphase Energy, 3M, or J&J? You can head to at CNBC Closing Bell on Twitter to vote. We will share those results a little bit later on in the hour. In the meantime, let's get a check on some top stocks to watch as we head into the close. Christina Partsinevelos, as always, is here with that. Christina.
Hi, Scott. Well, let's talk about Tesla, because shares are down roughly about 6% right now. The worst performer on the NASDAQ, despite posting a record quarterly deliveries after some deep price cuts. So a little short of the FactSet consensus, so that could be part of the reason you're seeing the sell-off. But you have to keep in mind, this stock has run up almost 80% just in the last 3 months or so. And so, like Phil LeBeau has said on our air, investors might be waiting for Q1 results on April 19th and maybe a little bit more details on margins given those steep price cuts. And to that point, shares of EV maker Rivian also lower after Q1 deliveries declined compared to Q4. So that's why you're seeing shares down 2.4%. And then lastly, shares of software HR firm Paychex trending roughly almost 2% lower. Mixed feelings from Wall Street. Barclays keeps an underweight rating with a price target of 109, so a little bit lower than what it is right now. While Bank of America just downgraded the stock to hold on worries of an economic slowdown. And they didn't just downgrade Paychex, they also downgraded payroll firm ADP to underperform, saying the stock tends to lag as unemployment starts to rise. You can see ADP shares also 2.5% lower. Scott.
All right. Christina, thank you. Christina Partsinevelos, we'll see you in just a bit. We are just getting started here on Closing Bell. Up next, shares of Endeavor and WWE moving lower on the back of some big deal news. I spoke exclusively to the CEO of Endeavor and the executive chairman, the founder of WWE, what they had to say about the deal and its valuation after the break. And later, a change of heart. Bernstein, Stacey Rascon upgrading, you heard me right, shares of Intel today after being bearish on the name for quite some time.
Their data center results were horrendous, and they sort of suggested they were going to get worse. On data center, I think AMD is going to steamroll them this year. I think Intel's issues are just getting started. I don't see any reason to own it. They clearly got caught on the wrong foot here. And like, it's not even just this quarter. This has been building for the last several quarters. They haven't had a good print in a while. This seems to be where they just went right off the cliff, though. They're out of money, right? They're out of free cash flow. They're burning cash.
Well, that doesn't sound so optimistic now, does it? So we will talk about that upgrade when Stacey Raskin joins us with his updated outlook. You're watching Closing Bell on CNBC.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them, so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Disney CEO Bob Iger firing back at Florida Governor Ron DeSantis today. Mr. Iger responding to a question at the company's annual shareholder meeting, calling DeSantis's push to control the district that contains Disney World, quote, anti-business and anti-Florida. All of this is the governor orders an investigation into an agreement between Disney and the district's previous oversight board. Let's bring in Disney shareholder and CNBC contributor Brenda Vingello now. So it's good to talk to you today, especially as all of this is taking place. And now we have, you know, this battle staying in the news as it is. Does that issue in and of itself in any way affect how you think about this stock and the prospects for it going forward?
It doesn't. But I do think it's unfortunate that this is coming up as just one more potential distraction for Bob Iger to have to deal with when he's really trying to institute some significant change at the company over the next couple of years. From our standpoint, this does not change how we view the stock. But I think this is a tricky environment that we're in, where Disney is a company that really has always tried to be inclusive of all. And I think that was at the heart of the statement that was made last year. That's now leading to, I think, some of this back and forth with DeSantis. But this does not change our view of the stock at all. We continue to think that Disney is incredibly uniquely positioned within the space. Mm-hmm. Really, content is so unique. We've heard a lot about that recently, with some speculation that Apple might be interested in the company. But this does not change our view.
So what does matter most if this does not?
Mm-hmm. I think really seeing Bob Iger implement the plan that he talked about just recently in February, where the company plans to cut $5.5 billion of costs, have three new business units, or organize the company into three business units, really focus on creativity, leading some of the business decisions they make. Those are what's at heart, in our view, of seeing this company turn around, although we would say the company is incredibly valuable as it is. To the extent that Bob Iger can make it a little bit better by improving profitability, especially within the streaming part of the business, that's an added bonus. But I really think that that's what's going to be the most important. But I'll also say the other thing that I think we'll need to start hearing about soon is a succession plan, or at least learning more about more senior executives at the firm that might be in the running to eventually take Bob Iger's place, because 2 years is going to go by pretty quickly.
Yeah. All right, Brenda, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Brenda Vingello joining us once again, a CNBC contributor. A quick programming note, by the way, do not miss tonight, Last Call. The close ally of Governor DeSantis, Central Florida Tourism Board member Bridget Ziegler, joins Brian Sullivan. That should be a very, very interesting conversation. Tune into Last Call. That's tonight at 7:00 Eastern time. Speaking of the entertainment business, both Endeavor and WWE shares lower on news that Endeavor will merge its UFC brand with the WWE forming a new company that will eventually go public on the New York Stock Exchange. The transaction values the so far unnamed company at some $21 billion, $12 billion for the UFC, $9.3 billion for the WWE, which is a substantial premium over WWE's current $6.5 billion market cap. After the deal closes, expected in the fourth quarter, Endeavor will hold a 51% controlling interest in the new enterprise, while existing WWE shareholders will hold a 49% interest. I asked Endeavor CEO Ari Emanuel about the deal and its valuation during an exclusive interview on Sunday in Los Angeles.
We paid a fair price, and I'll tell you why. We paid a little bit for control premium. With our cost cuts, their new deals coming up, which is right now, and our cost savings that we think we can extract from the business right now and grow the business with all of our levers, whether it be international sales, domestic, sponsorship, gambling, all the things that we do, I think it's right. I would also say to you is, when I bought IMG, everybody said I overpaid. It was actually one of the cheapest deals in sports. For sure, when I bought the UFC, everybody was like at $4.2 billion. They were like crazy. We've tripled the EBITDA in that period of time. And now with this, this is going to be UFC 2.0 as it relates to all the things in the flywheel that we can bring to them. And we have unbelievably attractive economics. The balance sheet's incredible. Our debt ratio is less than 3x. Our free cash flow conversion is unbelievable. So I think when people look at this business on a combined basis and also look at the remaining assets for both shareholder, it's incredible.
Are you still as committed to deleveraging as you've told Wall Street that you are? You said at a conference about a month ago, we've taken the company from 8x levered to 4x.
Below
I'd sleep
times.
A lot more if we got it lower. You still committed to that?
Well, right now in the new company, we'll be at, I want to make sure I said below 3, and at Endeavor, we'll be below 3 also times. So I think we're doing our job there.
Why didn't Wall Street see this coming? I read analyst notes which said, Deutsche Bank, we believe a WWE acquisition's off the table at this point. They thought maybe you were going to go in a different direction. What did Wall Street miss?
Everything. You know, listen, I don't think people realize, one, that Vince saw what we built with the UFC. He knows what he wants to do with the WWE and take it to the next level. We had long conversations about it. We think this is right for both both groups. I think they just missed the value proposition and the flywheel effect on both of the companies.
Now, the deal creates a live sports and entertainment giant, one that will soon be renegotiating its TV rights deal with partners NBC Universal, our parent, Fox, and potentially even other new players. Both Emanuel and WWE founder Vince McMahon optimistic about what they have to offer, no matter who does the bidding.
Here's what I would say to you is, the number one show in cable is Raw, 1.8 million viewers, up 9% from the same period of time, 2022 to 2023. Even though everybody says cable's dying, Raw is up. SmackDown, I think it's 2.3 million viewers, up 7%, same period. And the unbelievable thing is the 18 to 49 demographic is the best in the business. And the rate card is way below market by a significant amount. So when you think about those things, and in my opinion, and Vince and I talk about this, content's king. There's linear players, there's cable players, there's the SVOD players. Everybody wants the young demographic, the social. I mean, we're across the board, male, female, young, old, both assets. I think they're going to get a proper price.
And the idea here is there's nothing like the two combined. It's live. That's really a key, is our events are live. People want to watch live.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we are a success and continue to be a success and can fit in every medium, we can fit everywhere. In terms of social media and everything else, we fit everywhere.
Emanuel made it clear to me he wanted Vince McMahon to stick around. Even as many assumed that was unlikely, after a scandal that rocked the WWE and sent McMahon into retirement. He returned after nearly 6 months to help lead a potential transaction. So how will the two coexist? I asked.
We've known each other for 23 years. He, when I was a young agent, said, you know, why don't you represent us? It was an honor then. Throughout the pandemic, we got even closer. We've sold the media rights. There's a lot of trust here. But I think we've built a flywheel that Vince realized the value in what we did with UFC. He could see what we could do with his assets. And I'll just give him a little credit right here. You know, he saw cable when nobody saw cable. And he built a national brand way back in the day when there were about 15 different promoters out there. He built an in-house sales force to sell the product that nobody had. Pay-per-view, took it public. And last but not least, I think, you know, 5-6 years ago, he went direct to consumer when none of us were thinking about direct to consumer. So us being in business with Vince, and now you're sitting there with a guy who's seen around the corner better than anybody in our space, and him being able to play with our flywheel, just look out.
An important postscript here. I'm personally represented by WME. It's a unit of Endeavor, a talent agency that represents several CNBC anchors and on-air reporters. Up next, Macy's big move higher. That stock is popping big time on the back of an upgrade from none other than the top retail analyst, Matthew Boss. I can see him standing in the wings, which means he'll be right here with me at Post 9. Next, we'll find out where he sees the consumer heading from here when we come back. Black breaks down some under-the-radar names. Closing bell back after this.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Macy's shares are higher today after getting an upgrade from J.P. Morgan, the move coming on the heels of the firm's 9th annual retail roundup conference. Joining me now at Post 9 to discuss is the top retail analyst on Wall Street, Matthew Boss of J.P. Morgan. It's good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
This is a big deal. Obviously, it's being reflected in shares today, primarily because when they announced their 2020 reset to today, you say that they've largely accomplished their goals.
Yeah, you nailed it. So I think the first part was a leadership overhaul starting in 2020. I think it's a merchandising overhaul. And I think if you now think about the growth vectors moving forward, this is frankly a different company since 2019. And what I like is they're citing market share opportunity from the specialty sector so they can coincide with the off-pricers and they have the strongest global brands within the box.
Jeff Gennett, CEO, announced he's leaving early next year. What does that mean? Is that a negative?
No, I think Jeff put in place the stability of the organization. Like you said, starting in 2020, this overhaul, more from a merchandising, the closure of the stores and right-sizing the box and the distribution profile, that was the heavy lifting that I think Jeff has done. And now under Tony, I think the next leg with Tony and Adrian, their CFO, I think they're set to now accelerate the growth into it back half of 23 and into 24.
You, I guess, have to admit, I mean, it's look, for all of the things that the company has done to help its reset, you know, as they call it, it's a tough time to upgrade retail stocks.
Absolutely.
With all these concerns about the economy.
Absolutely.
About that at all?
No.
Despite the positives you look at?
100%. Look, and I've been on before and we've talked about the tough retail road in the front half of the year. The idea with this is a tactical move, meaning we're staying best in class. We're staying selective. We like the Nikes and the Lululemons of the world. We like off price for value and convenience. But at 2x EBITDA, this Macy's, which is now off 40% relative to early February, this to me was a tactical opportunity given the hard work that they've done that I think you could see a potential double in this.
So you consider this to be part of your best in class group?
I think you have best in class, and this is the show me story. But at 2x EBITDA, I like the risk reward on a tactical opportunity such as this.
Why has it been trading at a discount to its peers? Because of the ongoing reset and just questions about
where the company was at the given time?
So you have the brick and mortar versus e-commerce versus off-price debate, and they're right at the epicenter of it. You have the choppy consumer over the last couple of years. You have all of the changes with the brands that they sell and the disintermediation thesis of brands relative to the retailer. But I think the size and scale opportunity, the data science and all of the investments that Macy's has made positions them to come out as one of the winners.
What's the other takeaway from the conference? I mean, the prevailing view on the state of the consumer is what?
I think it's still uncertainty. That's why we remain selective. But I think now as you move forward, second quarter of last year is when the consumer rebudgeted. That was the peak of the food inflation and the fuel inflation. As you move into the back half of the year, comparisons ease 1,000 basis points for the top line, and you lap the margin glut from a year ago when all of the inventory was overheated and the clearance actions took place. So you have raw materials that are now coming down. Freight costs are now coming down. The consumer, I think, has rebalanced. So I think the biggest tone from retailers at our conference was more visibility into the controllables, even despite the uncertainty from the consumer.
This fits right into my next question when you're talking about Macy's, this idea that, you know, department stores were, if not dead, were sort of sucking wind. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Malls and all mm-hmm. of the concerns there. Has the state of that changed? Are department stores getting new life in any way or no?
So I look at it differently. I think the lines have blurred across all of retail. I think what you need to win is value and convenience. So thinking about a company as a department store relative to an online REIT, I think what really matters is, can you be the destination for top brands at values and offer convenience? And that's the investments that I think Macy's has made. That's why I think the off-pricers, Ross, TJ, and Burlington are working. And that's why the direct-to-consumer for those strong brands such as Nike and Lululemon is winning in this environment.
It's good to have you here. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Great to be back.
Send shares of Macy's higher by better than 7%. That's Matthew Boss of JP Morgan. Up next, we are tracking the biggest movers as we head a little bit closer to the close. Christina Partsinevelos is standing by again with that. Christina?
Well, we have a cybersecurity attack on one semiconductor storage name, but one analyst says, don't fret. I'll explain this potential investment plan when we return.
Let's get back to Christina Partsinevelos now for a look at some more key stocks to watch today. Christina?
Well, let's start with shares of data storage device maker Western Digital. They're down about 2% after disclosing a cyber attack from March 26. Several of its services are still offline right now, and that's why the shares are actually 1.3% lower, so they're a little bit better. But Wedbush's Matt Bryson points out there have been similar breaches at NVIDIA and AMD just over the last few years or so with limited repercussions. In other words, they aren't too worried about Western Digital. Could be an opportunity to buy in. Shares of health insurance firm United Health are up, over 4.5% after the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services on Friday afternoon announced updated payment rates. For example, Medicare Advantage should see a revenue increase of at least 3% higher. That means these policy updates could benefit United Healthcare, and that's why you're seeing the shares up.
Yep. Big day, UNH. All right, Christina, thank you. It's the last chance to weigh in on our Twitter question of the day. We asked which of these Q1 losers is best positioned for Q2. Charles Schwab, Enphase Energy, 3M, or J&J? Head to @CNBC Closing Bell on Twitter. Please vote. We got the results right after the break. Let's get the results now of our Twitter question. We asked which of these Q1 losers is the best bet for Q2. The majority of you saying Charles Schwab. By a landslide, more than 51%. Up next, under the radar stock picks for your portfolio from top value investor Scott Black. That's next. We're now in the closing bell market zone. CNBC senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here to break down the crucial moments of the trading day. Plus, Scott Black of Delphi Management with two stock picks he sees weathering market weakness. And Stacey Rascon of Bernstein on why he is turning reluctantly, lukewarm, sort of, kinda, on Intel. We'll talk to him about that coming up. Mike Santoli, you first. It was primarily a two-stock story for much of the day, United Health and Chevron.
Sure.
Broadening out a little bit. S&P's up about 14.5.
In terms of the Dow, that's absolutely the case. And nothing else is really standing out in terms of individual names. What I do think is noteworthy is this is exactly how the cooling off of the big tech stocks you would hope it would go if you were bullish on the market, which is a push for the broad tape, 50-50 up and down stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. You have the index is kind of a push, and you have software and semis down about 1% each. On a day when you got an OPEC production cut and a bad manufacturing number and crude's up 6%, the VIX is going to close red. Right. So the volatility index is sort of being drained away of drama because we're rotating instead for now of retreating. I'll just say it looks sort of like the beginning of February. Great January, accelerated higher into the end of January. You had 2 days of extension higher, and then you got your broader pullback. So we'll
NASDAQ
see.
Off the lows. So they're not letting technology get
not
pushed
much,
down
no.
too much. We'll see if that
it's
continues as well.
Yeah.
Scott Black, to you, judging from your notes, you're pretty negative on the market, no?
Well, we try to be agnostic in terms of percentage invested, but by any stretch of the imagination, valuations are high. If you use 113 for a number on the S&P, which I think is realistic for 2023 earnings, you're 19.5 times earnings. The NASDAQ is selling at about a 25 multiple, and even the Russell 2000, which has been decimated, is over 21 times earnings. And I don't think interest rates are coming down in the near future. So I think the market's fully priced. It's been liquidity driven by the mega caps in the month of March, as I alluded to in the write-up. Obviously, the Russell 2000 value and the 2500 value got left in the dust. They were down dramatically, and they lagged the S&P by 12 and 14 percentage points, respectively, which is a huge gulf.
But you do see the Fed raising interest rates more. I mean, that remains the central question as we head into the second quarter, because you have to believe that part of the rally in the first was on the idea of a pause.
I don't think so. I'm old enough to remember the early 80s, and Jimmy Carter had the high inflation over 12%. Mr. Volcker came in at the beginning of the Reagan administration. We had to break the back of inflation. Inflation is still running at 6% on CPI. Even on a six-month lag, it's still over 4%, and the PCE, ex energy and food, still 4+. That's nowhere near close to what the Fed wants at 2%. So I think that all things being equal, unless we have another disaster worse than Silicon Valley Bank, interest rates, the Fed funds rate, are going to have to continue to climb this year until we choke off inflation.
Okay. Well, let's hope we don't have that. Chubb, one of your two picks to help weather the storm you say is still swirling around us. Tell me briefly why Chubb, and then we'll move to choice number two.
Well, Chubb's down to $197 a share. And I use it on the Barron's Roundtable. I think they're going to earn about $18.20. This is my own model with an 88 combined ratio. It's a 10.8 multiple, 14.5% return on equity. One, they're a quality underwriter. They outpace the industry year in, year out in combined ratio by 500 to 600 basis points a year, whether you take a 1, 3, 5, or 10 year trailing. The net written premiums are going up at about 7% clip. They have a well-diversified book of business in terms of lines. I mean, large company commercials, 20%, small mid-cap commercials, 25%, personal lines, 18%. It's a very well-run company. It's extremely well-reserved, and Irving Greenberg's done a very good job. The other thing is they're a beneficiary of rising interest rates. For every 100 basis points increment in interest rates, they earn $1.1 billion pre-tax. So
unless
there's some... Okay.
Hey, Scott, forgive me. I'm going to have to let you go, but I'm doing it for a good cause, and I promise I'll make it up to you sometime down the road. But it's a special day here at the New York Stock Exchange for the close. The gentleman on your left here is U.S. Navy Commander Everett Alvarez, as he is walking up to take part in the closing ceremony today, along with the United States of America Vietnam commemoration. He was a pilot shot down during the Vietnam War near Hanoi. The first American aviator taken captive. He was held for 8 years and 7 months before being released on February 12, 1973. See him signing the book there alongside Josh King of the New York Stock Exchange. Numerous decorations, the Silver Star, two Legions of Merit, the Flying Cross, two Bronze Stars, and two Purple Hearts. Great tradition they have here at the New York Stock Exchange, as you heard those clapping. Anytime a serviceman or woman show on the floor of the exchange, and he is going to ring the bell. He's signing the book now, as you can see right there, and we thank him for his service. That's again U.S. Navy Commander Everett Alvarez. We will move back in just a moment to our interview with Stacey Rascon, who upgraded Intel today, half-heartedly so. I said earlier, Stacey, no-heartedly so, really, because you still don't like this stock.
So look, from a sell side standpoint, there's two things that are bad. The worst thing that happens is when a call blows up. The second worst thing that happens is when a call works, right? When it works, you, at some point you have to figure out when is the right time to take your foot off the gas. And I'll be honest, like I'd actually still would love to be able to make that call. Like you're right. I don't really like the company fundamentally at this point. I think they've got a lot of wood to chop in front of them, but if you sort of stand back and you take a hard look, and I do try to be intellectually honest in all the work that I do, I think we're at the point now where at least tactically expectations are finally low enough. There's been a lot of bad news that has happened. Everybody knows everything that's happened, but it's out there, it's known. And then this is the first time in a long time where when I look at the numbers going forward, I actually think they're finally low enough, maybe even too low. And I think there is the possibility as we get into the second half and end of the year that we could actually see numbers start to go up for a change rather than down. And given that, it's just hard to maintain the underperformed call, like at least tactically into the end of the year. And like when we get there, we'll see what happens. But
let me ask you this.
Right now, every good thing comes to an end at some point.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. In all seriousness, I mean, you mentioned, you know, you're looking at the numbers going forward. And I wonder about the other number going forward, and that's the stock price and the fact that this stock over the past few months, if my memory serves me correct, is up better than 20 or some odd so percent.
Yeah.
Are you swayed at all by being afraid of missing what looks to be a more technically advantaged stock, if you will?
We're already there, right? I mean, it's already been, as you mentioned, strong. And in fact, you know, what marked the bottom was actually the dividend cut a little while back. That day or the day after was the bottom in the stock, and then people started to buy it. Because I think, again, if you were tactically short on bad news happening, that was about the end of it. That was kind of marked like the worst that could happen. And I think the general view is it can only get better from here. And again, you start to look at the dynamics. You know, PCs have obviously been really, really bad. But where the company was like stuffing the channel before, they're now draining out inventory. You can look at expectations for both client and data center again as we get into the back half, and there's almost no growth. In some cases, there's still declines year over year built into the street numbers, even as we're potentially going to go from an undershipment regime to a more normalized regime. The idea that the bad news, such as it is, barring some other like thing out of left field, which I guess could happen, it's Intel, but barring that, the idea that like enough bad news is in the stock where people can feel a little more comfortable buying it, I think we've been in that sort of technical regime for a while.
So what, okay, technically, yes, I hear you, but what gets you to the point fundamentally where you can say, you know what, I think the risk reward is decent enough that you could buy the stock?
Yeah, I mean, look, let's look at the roadmap execution. So like, you know, they had their data center event last week and the stock was up, I think, 10% in the day or two after that. Not because they said anything, you know, was better. It wasn't getting worse, right? So that's fine. Let's see it actually start to get better, and then maybe we can talk.
Stace, good to have you. Interesting call. Certainly had a lot of people talking today, even you, in the manner in which you described your own upgrade. We'll talk to you soon. That's Stacey Rascon. Mike, we're going to get the two-minute warning in just a moment. We need to talk energy.
Yes. Okay,
whether this surprise OPEC cut has this trade back on the move for the first time in months.
It's back alive. What's interesting is, and we were talking about it last week, you were able to say, even through all the bad news and the macro uncertainty and the fact that oil had trouble getting out of its own way, it wasn't breaking 70. It was kind of in this range. So now we're at the top end of that range. I think the stocks are responding very well, but they also have been outperforming crude. I was looking at the free cash flow ETF, the cash cows ETF. Mm-hmm. It's 35% energy. So that's what the stocks are about. The stocks are about, we think they can maintain the free cash flow and the shareholder capital return and things like that. I don't know if it means crude actually gets moving. We do have the dollar weaker right here, but it's not exactly like it caught flight. We're still at 80. Brent was actually down. So we'll see how it plays out. I do think it insulates you from this sense out there that the fundamentals are really falling away for crude, even if demand is not really roaring back.
Noticing as we're showing these stocks on the right-hand chart under Market Zone here, Apple.
Yeah.
Positive. On the day you described, and you didn't use the word, but I was thinking of it as you said, the orderly nature of if this is how tech is going to pull back, so be it, and fine with me.
You and look, it might be a lot to ask for it to be exactly this gentle. You are overbought on the big cap indexes. You can go sideways for a while, and that takes care of that. But the VIX, I was flagging this stat on Friday, too. If it closes here, we're down 7 days in a row. It's extremely rare to have that kind of volatility drain. So it's happening at a time where the S&P is like 1% from its high for the year. So I think it is a good test. But the nature of the pullback is going to be significant. And if it is really benign the way this is so far, and people aren't leaving the market, they're just moving within it, I think it's a net positive. We'll see if it can last.
Yeah, NAS was down 1%, so it's recovered quite substantially. The S&P 500 about a third of a percent higher. The Dow leading the way today up 1%.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.